This episode of La Verdad Podcast is brought to you by our friend Sonia Figueroa of CSonia.com.
Hey, B Fig.
What's up?
What's my favorite thing to do in the summer?
Watch baseball.
No. You know, my favorite thing to do is barbecue and family get-togethers, but it's hard to do when I don't have a nice big backyard.
True, which is why we should be reaching out to our chica Sonia if you want to buy a house.
Yeah, actually, Sonia has a ton of experience in helping people find the right home, especially first-time buyers, over 12 years to be exact. So, if you're listening right now and you have the itch on buying or selling, you need to contact Sonia Figueroa. V-Fig, how can you do that?
Easy. Just visit www.csonia.com. That is www.seesonia.com. Or just search for her online. She also speaks Spanish.
Habla español, mi gente, and back to the show.
This is La Verdad Podcast.
Bueno, mi gente, welcome back to another episode of La Verdad Podcast, and this is your host, Christian, and I'm by myself today with our guest that we've been having on a monthly basis, and I'll go ahead and introduce him in just a little bit. But before we actually begin the podcast, I've been doing this for the last couple of weeks, and it's proven to be successful. Make sure, mi gente, that you go to our website. If you really like what we do, go to our website or go to Facebook.com or Instagram. Like our page, but aside from that, if you could go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel as well as to our our podcast on iTunes. If you're using the Apple, an Apple device, or if you're using an Android device, go over to your Stitcher app or your Google Play app and subscribe to our podcast. You know, so like that, you could get our podcast directly on your phone as soon as we launch the actual episode. On YouTube, we usually put up videos whenever we do an interview in person for today's episode. And the way that you find it is going to at La Verdad LTD. So that's how we're labeled on all social media platforms. But today's episode, I'm actually recording over online. So you might hear a little glitches here and there. Bear with us. But we do this. We've been trying to do this like on a monthly basis. It's something that a lot of our listeners have been asking us to do. And that's to cover mental health topics. And we have our boy with us who's been an avid La Verdad follower and also a great friend of mine, Rene Garcia, on the phone. How you been, man?
I feel like I should have my own intro music by now. You know, like
some should come up.
Like something like banda, like, you know, like, like something like that. I've been doing great, man. It's good to hear your voice again, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's one of those things where, you know, you get in the swing of things, you know, you start doing work. I just started a new position, so I've been busy with that. And then the podcast is still growing, so we've been getting a lot of demands for things such as, like, mental health and other topics that have to do with the Latino community. So it's always great to have you on. One of the things that I hit you up a couple of days ago, and mi gente, the reason I hit him up was because if you guys have been aware, the U.S. has been going through some crazy stuff. Like, I mean, I have my uncle over here calling me, telling me that the end of the world's happening. I got tías asking me to do a rosary because it's just a lot of crazy things have happened. You know, to start off with, you know, we had a couple of major threats when it came down to North Korea, Chicago being one of the places that was being threatened. And Renee, I'll tell you right now, bro, I was walking outside. And I think I was on my phone and I had gotten an alert from the city of Chicago saying, hey, you know, this is, if you want more information on a nuclear disaster, we just launched a, we just launched a how-to guide, what to do, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and that freaks me the F out, bro. Like, you know, I'm just sitting here. I'm like, holy crap. My daughter doesn't live with me. So the first thing I think about is what the hell would I do? You know, do I go looking for my daughter? You know, that's the first thing that goes through my mind.
Yeah, so, I can agree with that, man. I mean, because I'm originally from Houston, and Houston's a big port town. There's a lot of business that goes through that city. And so I feel like that's, my parents have also ingrained in my head that any major disaster that's going to hit the U.S. is going to start with Houston, Texas. So therefore, like, you know, we need to make sure, how do we prepare for it? So I can totally relate to that 100%.
And I think Houston was in, on the list as well of, like, threats. I know Chicago, New York, L.A., obviously. But I think in when it came down to the southern area, Houston was one of them. Or San Antonio, I can't think.
I know. Why can't they go for San Antonio? I mean, you know, like, who likes San Antonio or El Paso? Knock out one of those. No, I'm just kidding.
Our listeners from El Paso, please send any hate mail to Rene Garcia of Trebi Therapy.
You can guess where my ex-girlfriends are from. Take a wild guess.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding.
But it's crazy, yo. Like I'm over here. I'm walking. I'm getting these alerts. And then a couple days later, we get this big thing that's happening right now. And that was the whole Unite the Right rally that happened in, where was that again? Charlottesville?
Yeah, Charlottesville, Virginia. Yeah.
Virginia. And that one kind of hit me harder, right? It hit me harder because I could potentially go through that today, tomorrow. I mean, a nuclear disaster can happen, but we've been hearing about that for so long. Whereas, like, this rally and the way that it happened and all the anger behind it, I started thinking back of, holy crap, I'm going to go back in time to the times of some of these podcasts that I've had, some of these people I've had in the podcast, like Chacha Jimenez, where he's talking about getting beat up by, you know, white supremacist groups or whatnot.
Right.
And I'm sitting here and I'm like, damn, you know, because, you know, technically nowadays we do have a voice in the community, so I'm sure we have haters or hate groups that are probably looking at our podcast and saying, oh, these guys talk too much about culture, tradition, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here and I'm like, holy crap, I could be walking, and instead of worrying about this natural nuclear disaster, I could be worried about getting beat up by some white supremacist group or potentially getting hate thrown at my daughter or just right. experiencing hate. And then later on in life, I personally feel, and you could kind of talk more about it, that trauma of that one moment, it's going to haunt me for the rest of my life. And I've had that. I've had issues like that in my past where I've experienced racism. And, you know, if I walk into a room of a certain, you know, group of people, I start feeling a little intimidated, you know. And perhaps this is what's happening, and perhaps this is what's happening to a lot of people in the U.S., and we could talk a little bit more. But basically, the reason I wanted to bring Rene on here was because I wanted to talk about racism, trauma, and mental health, right? Or racism, is it a product of trauma? You know, and we'll kind of like geek out and talk a little bit more about it. But what are your thoughts behind, first of all, what are your personal thoughts behind what happened in that rally?
Well, I think for one, we're in an interesting time that, you know, like, for instance, living in Texas, being a person of color and growing up in Texas is one thing. But, and I've told this before, this is nothing new for people that have listened to the episodes that I've been on, is that I grew up a privileged life. I didn't grow up impoverished. I didn't grow up in poverty. So also my experience is kind of weird and not a common one here in Texas. But at the same time, though, for instance, I had to go out to East Texas to go buy some flooring for my parents. And because the company, long story short, the company had stopped making this flooring, and I just happened to find some random redneck in East Texas that had some leftover tiles. And the first thing I did was look up a hate group website to see, are there any hate groups in the city? Because I wanted to make sure that I brought somebody with me or just didn't go alone, because you just don't know, right?
That's interesting, man. Is it that? What made you do that? Was there something that happened to someone
before? But you know what's funny? I don't know what made me do it. I just the side of me was thought, I wonder, I don't know anything about East Texas. I didn't grow up in that land. I didn't grow up in that area. I do,
you know, I kind of share the same thing, but in the sense of when I go to the city, back in the day when I used to go around the city, instead of searching for hate groups, I would search for gangs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to know what gang was around there. So I guess we could probably share that in the sense that you probably, it's a little different area, but it's the same kind of thought.
Right. And I think with racism is, here's the thing, like, you know, the kind of bringing this back to racism is, you know, what we look at as racism may be the only way a person grew up thinking. Okay, so, you know, a lot of our parents, and this is, I think we can openly talk about this now, and I think you, and I love how y'all's, in your Chacha Jimenez interview, he really did a great job of breaking down the culturally different parts of the cities. And it said, these people take care of this part of the city. We're going to take care of our part of the city. In a sense, that is a kind of, and again, I'm kind of stretching here, is that can be a idea of racism, except in a way that is protecting and out of way of survival and out of a way of you being able to live to the next day and take care of your own people. And I think our parents, I'll use my family, for example. I mean, they did grow up in a time of South Texas in the early 60s. I mean, if they spoke Spanish in class, they were beaten in front of the class. So assimilation really wasn't even a choice. It was do it or you're ostracized. You're not part of this community. And some people, different people took that in different ways. And so I think with racism, it's hard, and this is kind of where I have to put my therapy hat on and kind of take off my, you know, my Renee hat, because it's a completely different person. You know, what therapy has taught me is that it isn't your job to bring in these biases and things into a session. It's your job to ask yourself, how did that person get to that point? What was the life experiences and the events that that person said, you know what, I'm going to wear this red shirt with a swastika sign on it. And not only that, not only am I going to wear it and wear it proudly, I'm going to go out and make sure people see my face, my bare face, to know that this represents the things that I, the things that represent me.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one of the things we have to really look at is, and I think that's what makes this situation super scary, is this isn't just, the hate groups have been around, and I don't think they're going anywhere. But I think what we're seeing now is they now have the bravado. They now have the instinct to now come out forcefully and not give a fuck about what anybody thinks about them.
Exactly. And that's the scary part.
That to me is the most terrifying thing about all this.
Yeah. And I remember watching a it was probably like a meme or something. And you know, back in the day when you had the big KKK gathering, Ku Klux Klan. And if we have anybody that doesn't know what a Ku Klux Klan is, probably one of the biggest hate groups, white supremacist hate groups here in the U.S. And they used to cover themselves, right? They would have the hood and always covered. You really didn't know who they were. They could have probably been your judge. They could have been a teacher or whatever. But now the fact that they're able to come out and openly put up a Facebook Live video or you know, stand and march around proudly, it's scary, man. It's scary because it just means that they don't care.
Right.
They don't care what
Right. And I think what the thing that you're touching on too is where I think a lot of people are forgetting the historical value of, not just that it's really messed up, but these people were in power. These people were in powerful positions. They were the judges. They were the police officers. They were the lawyers. They were the, you know, the business owners. I mean, it wasn't just, yeah, of course there were low wage workers, stuff like that. But that's the scariest thing about this. And that's what, where I kind of feel, because people are trying to bring in the Black Lives Matter and compare it like as if it's equal. And I'm just, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
That they're not recognizing that it was these people of power that were arresting random people of color, hanging them, killing them, you know, doing this. And just to compare it to the two, I just think is absurd, absolutely absurd.
And it's just crazy too, because we've had, you know, racism has been around. I've seen racism since I was a little kid, whether it be a Latino being racist against, you know, an African-American or an African-American being racist against Latinos.
Right.
I've seen it for a long time. Now, the thing is that we have this, I believe, you know, this is my personal opinion, that we have this president in power, right, that is okay with that. You know, it's okay. He's empowered these people to feel like it's okay for them to go out and say, you know, I am white lives matter, or I am white and I hate everybody that's not of the pure race. And not just that, but just he's basically saying, well, there's good people in this side and there's good people in that side. And to me, it's kind of like, it's mind blowing, man. It's kind of like, yo, like, you're racist. You want that person to die. And it's okay to be that kind of person. Like, it's okay to be a racist and not want to deal with any, you know, and want African-American or a Latino to die or a Jew to die just because of what they are and not because of what they do or the underlying factor of who they are or whatever. to me, that's scary. And that's what's bringing all these people out. And not just that, but I feel like a lot of people that are aligning themselves with this political party, or whether it be, you know, if they're, it tends to happen here a lot. And I know it happens a lot in Puerto Rico, is that, hey, if I'm Republican in Puerto Rico, if I'm part of this political party, I'm part of that political party till I die.
Right.
And I'll do whatever that political party does, because you know what? If I betray them, I'm betraying myself. I'm betraying my beliefs. And I think that's happening a lot nowadays, where you might have these Republicans who were probably a little bit, you know, they're more of the conservative. They might have some racial things that happen. And now they're like, shit, I have to kind of align myself with this person. Now, well, there's also some that have kind of denounced it as well, you know, but I'm seeing that a lot. And you know, I've seen it a lot, even with Latinos, right, where they're pro-Trump, and they're looking for any way they can to support this Unite the Right rally, or support this, all these crazy incidents that have been happening in the last couple of days.
Right, and I think there is that kind of, like, as long as your party loses, then it's all good, you know? And
sucks, man.
and yeah, that's really where we're at right now in politics. But I think whenever you talk to people and you get to, and this is where I get my therapy hat on real hardcore, is, you know, if you get to these people one-on-one, you know, there's genuine concerns. There's genuine saying, you know, I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills. I don't know how I'm going to pay my insurance. I don't know how I'm going to, you know, save for retirement. Retirement's not even it's a joke to me to even think about retirement when I can't even, you know, make my bills for this month. And so I think both sides really do a job of saying, okay, we're going to take care of everything as long as you just vote for us. And I really think this no middle ground thing has really done us a disservice to our communities, because it's either this way or that way. And you can sit in the middle and say, I don't want to vote, but then we get what happened this year. You know, we get what happened is, now we had this about, what, less than 50% of the U.S. voted. And all it took was, I think I read an article that said only a 60,000 or something like that in certain amount of states were the ones that gave, you know, President Trump the numbers to win. Yeah. And now a number of people, this isn't just my opinion, a number of people are saying, you know, he's just clearly not fit for this job.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, hello, wake up. Like, right. Oh my God. And we could go on and on about that, but I really want to hone in on this topic of racism and perhaps trauma leading to racism.
Right.
Do you believe people are born racist or get that at a really young age?
Yes and no. So born racist means like you're born with blue eyes, born with green eyes. I don't think they're born racist, but it's kind of like anger. So I actually did a podcast about this recently, and the idea is, in response to everything, and so I talk about, you know, anger isn't inherited. You know, it's not a gene that's passed on from generation to generation. It's a learned behavior. We learn how to be angry. We learn how to hate. And the core of anger isn't a bad thing. It's actually a really positive thing. If you are angry that you grew up impoverished, and you turn that anger to sit here and say, you know what, I'm going to study my hardest, get my scholarships, go to Harvard, and save my family from the hood. And that anger was something you turned to something positive. If you're angry, your boss didn't give you the accolades because you worked your ass off hard in a project, and you go up to him and say, hey, excuse me, you know, I deserve that kind of recognition because I worked hard for it. That anger is saying you had a boundary crossed, and you have something, you are allowed to be angry. You have a right to be angry. Anger is something we're all going to experience. It's just how we display it is what's really gotten tough and really given anger a bad rep. I call it, you know, anger has a bad PR agent, and that PR agent is rage and hate. Yeah. And a lot of people think with anger management is just, you got to be peaceful, you got to be serene, you got to be happy. And really, it's figuring out, how do I express my anger in the healthiest, most productive way that is both not destructive to others and myself at the same time? Yeah. So when we talk about racism, again, listen, you know, if I had a female client who was physically and sexually assaulted by a Hispanic male, and she sees my name. Oh, Renee, I have a counselor, Renee. I wonder what she looks like, you know? And I come in the room, and I'm a large Hispanic male with a beard, and she starts shaking because she has been traumatically affected by that sexual assault. I'm not going to sit here and say, ugh, you need to change. You know, we need to talk about my family and all the good stuff my family's done, all right? Like, who the hell am I to sit here and tell her that her fear and her sadness and her trauma is unjust?
And that's very interesting, and sorry to cut you off. I know you're probably going to go into more
detail. Oh, I'm going. I was on a roll, man. No, go ahead.
It comes up to my mind because there's a lot of people, and I'm playing devil's advocate here. There's a lot of people who might say, you know, that they see, oh, that white person, look at it. They're getting scared because they're around a bunch of Latinos or a bunch of African-American. But could that also be a product that maybe perhaps they've never been sexually abused, never been, nothing has happened to them themselves, but when they were little, they probably kept telling them stories of somebody else.
For sure.
Can that be a underlying factor as well?
I completely agree with that. Listen, hate and anger is passed on. We inherit it. We learn it. We are... and the people that benefit from it stoke that fire. If someone can benefit from you, it's like, listen, I don't know, you could probably know more about this than I do. I just know because I watch a lot of Gangland, okay? But you know, with those TV shows that I've seen, gang members, they look for those kids who are alone, who don't have support. Hey, bro, I'm going to be your family. And you want me to be family? Yeah, we can be family. Okay, well, if you're really my family member, then you'll help me do this.
Yep.
And then that's how they recruit the younger kids. They recruit the kids that have nothing to lose, that have something to prove. And, of course, they're benefiting from that. So, again, I really think this is passed on for people that can feel that they can really benefit from these younger generations putting their lives on the line and stoking that hate, because they may have some genuine concern and they may be angry about something that is very real. But someone sweeps in and says, no. Not only is that anger, but let me turn that to hate, because that's where you can get something done. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, I'll give you a good example, a parallel. A lot, when Katrina hit in Louisiana, a lot of untrained therapists were going in there because they had big hearts and they wanted to help out and they wanted to be there to support others. And what was happening was, is people were going there and they're saying, the therapists were talking to the people and they're saying, oh, you're sad, right? You're depressed, right? I mean, you lost everything, right? I mean, you've got to be depressed. And what's happening is people were like, I mean, I'm sad, but oh shit, now I'm really depressed. You know, so what happened is these experiences where we don't know how people take certain events. What is trauma to someone may not be trauma to another person. Resilience sometimes isn't always the best thing because you lose a lot of emotional detachment. So it always just depends on how that person is. But if you have people externally stoking that fire and pushing you in a way that you feel that you should be, of course people are going to end up there. And personally, that's where I feel where racism ends up.
And that's, you know, if you look back into history and now that we're seeing a lot of these neo-Nazis, you know, you look into history, you know, and you read up on it, and using us, for example, the Nazi Germany was using the scapegoat of, we're like this because of Jews, right? And
right.
You start using a specific one little thing because you're giving that person, I personally think it's giving that person the answer to your problems, right?
For sure. And we have a great Holocaust Museum in Houston, and I took my family to it not too long ago. And, you know, again, it starts with the jokes. It starts with the literature. It starts with, you know, just the kind of everyday kind of, you know, conversations. You know, these stupid people, they don't know what, you know, they're ruining our country. They're, you know, if they were gone, things would be so good. Yeah. And it's little stuff like that that starts really, again, people are upset. Maybe they did have some negative experiences with the Jews. And then all it takes is someone flaming that fire a little bit, pushing the right direction. And then what happens is, you know, World War II.
And just that little bit of, you know, the answer, you know, it's a lot of times we're sitting here and we're like, oh, I don't know why things are going so bad for me. I don't know this. But when somebody tells you, hey, I know why things are going bad for you, is those Mexicans that are taking your jobs. It's the Latinos that just came up to your neighborhood. That's why your property, you know, is lowered or whatever. you start giving an answer to your problem, and it's like, I got to get rid of that problem, right? It's the first thing I think as a human. You kind of want to, if you have one issue or one problem, you kind of want to erase it and jump over it and get rid of that one problem. So I feel like it starts to feel that fire within that person, and that hatred takes over the actual issue, right? Or the actual problem that's happening within the household.
Right. Completely agree.
It's interesting to see just the way that, for example, there was a video that was surfacing around, and I was talking to Renee about it before the podcast, and it was a Puerto Rican man, obviously he looked more white than anything, you know, more European in him than African, because as we all know, Puerto Ricans share three big, you know, there's three big races. If you're Puerto Rican, you have European in you, you have African in you, and you have Native, right? So obviously the guy didn't read his research or whatnot, but he was on there and he was talking about, oh, you know, I'm a alternative right. That's what they're calling it now. Big supporter. I was at the march at the Unite the Right rally. You know, I am pro-Trump, all these things. You know, if you want to watch the full video, we have it on the La Verdad Facebook. And then he mentions, he's like, but I'm not racist because I'm Puerto Rican, you know? And to me, I was like, man, bullshit, dude. Like, come on, man. I know a lot of Puerto Ricans that are mad racist.
Right.
And I see it within even our own. And I think that brings up, you know, this topic of discussion where it's like, you know, it's not just being white and you don't like Latinos or blacks that makes you a racist, but there's also within our own community of Latinos, we have a lot of racism.
Oh, for sure.
From the get-go, and we had this conversation with one of our podcasts, it was the whole thing of whether you're born with pelo malo or pelo lacio.
Yeah.
Right? And that, from the get-go, it's like you're ugly because you have black features.
Right.
Blackface still happens in Latin America big time. I bet you right now there's probably somebody doing a blackface drama out there or a show in blackface.
Right.
And that's really looked down upon. I remember seeing blackface here in the U.S. and thinking it was okay. Because I was so used to it, seeing it from Puerto Rican comedy, that to me it was like nothing until I went to college and we had the Black Student Union was kind of talking about it and bringing that to light. Same thing with Puerto Ricans against Mexicans against Puerto Ricans. There's always that big fight within us. But I always feel like there's that underlying factor that we don't want to talk about. And you were talking a little bit more about it, which is, you know, that hatred that you have, that anger that turns into hatred inside of you. Now, is that something that therapists are dealing with a lot nowadays? Like,
well, I wouldn't say. I mean, listen, I think that people have different opinions and about different experiences they go through. I can't really speak for, you know, clinicians and if they have had an influx of racist patients. But I mean, you know, with that, there's an idea of a theory called narrative therapy. And the idea of it is that, you know, we have things that happen to us, and we have this almost, we have this idea of how things should be going. Like, I should be here right now. I should be doing this right now. For people of my stature, of my background, and I'll even use my example. I'll use me, for example. Whenever I found out that I was going to be a dad in my early 20s, you know, my mom came from Mexico. My father's from South Texas. Like, this wasn't supposed to happen to a second generation immigrant, you know? In my head, I was thinking, oh, here I am. Now I'm another, you know, Hispanic American, the statistic, you know, I'm just check off another box here. And that was a huge thing for me because I felt my parents did everything right. They did everything they should have done. And then they had this kid that had this thing happen that was not supposed to happen, you know? And so when we talk about, you know, clients and their personal experiences, really the best therapists, in my opinion, out there are, their job isn't to sit here and tell them that they're wrong. It's to figure out what got them to that point of that this is okay, that them thinking that them having these ideals is okay. And sometimes some people are unwilling to budge, and they're unwilling to get to a point of change where they can challenge themselves. And that's really tough. That's really, really hard, because ultimately I just want to have a conversation with someone and I want to hear what they have to say, but I want them to hear what I have to say as well too. And it's this kind of back and forth dance. And I think you hit it right on the head, the idea of Latin America being a great example of racism being still being present. In Mexico, there's a saying, pinche indio, ay, este pinche indio, you know, like this fucking Indian, which is the one of the most racist statements ever, but we still say it. And you hear it often in circles. And, you know, again, it's just part of the culture, but again, it's sourced in racism. No one says, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to give a job to this guy. But again, it's still a saying and still absolutely ingrained in the culture. And so the best way to change this is really to have the older culture sit down and respect the younger culture and vice versa. And how do we get a middle ground of understanding that, hey, that may have been okay back then, but there's a reason it's not okay now. And you may have assimilated and been able to survive that by assimilating to it and saying that's okay, but we're in a point in time, and this is where I'm about to get on a soapbox here, and I apologize, but you know, this is where I feel like people talk shit about millennials a lot, and I'm an older millennial, and I'm very proud to be an older millennial, because I feel like millennials are the first group to sit here and say, you know what, that's kind of fucked up. Yep. You know, hey, I think that that stuff you're, hey, this how inflation and cost has gone up exponentially and income hasn't, that's kind of fucked up. And because we just have that saying, we're called snowflakes, we're called whiners, we're called complainers. And there has to be a gap, not only between these, there needs to be a gap filled in communication. How are we talking to each other and understanding where each other are coming from? And that's one of the hardest things I do with families that I work with, is just saying, okay, just, you know, oh, my son and his damn cell phone, he won't talk to me. Okay, you know, you bought him that cell phone, right? And you know that you have one too. So how about y'all put both the phones down and y'all go do something together? Or how about y'all sit on the phones together and learn what y'all are messing with on the phone? You know, there has to be some type of middle ground. And communication is really the key to a lot of it.
And I remember, you know, bringing back another podcast that we did, and this was with Ray Salazar, I think two episodes behind this one or one episode behind this one. And we talked about the relationship between a father and a son. And then now that you brought up the whole, you know, hey, my son has this phone, doesn't pay attention to me.
Yeah.
And we talked about how a lot of times the relationship between a father and a son, or a father and their kid, is that we look at ways to find a common ground. And I don't know if you do this as well, but for me, it's, for example, you know, if we're watching a movie or whatnot, we might not even talk, but we're watching that movie together, and then we'll kind of like take that little moment that we have where we're spending the time together, and that to me creates a lot of memories. So for example, with me and my father, it's been music, you know, and we might not talk about anything else, but we're talking about a YouTube video where we saw an old salsa band playing, and that created that bond. So I guess, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand what you're talking about as far as finding the best use of your time with the person that you're with, or instead of complaining about it. And I know it takes a little bit off topic of what we're talking about, but I just wanted to bring that up because it clicked in my mind when you were talking about that. I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm doing something right.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it absolutely plays a role into it, because, again, it's the human connection, right? How are we respecting the human connection of conversation? And I think this is why the podcast medium has been so successful, is because, I mean, I listen to so many podcasts. I mean, yeah, I love Conan O'Brien and I love, you know, the shows at night. But, I mean, after a while, you hit those interviews and you're like, oh, man, I want more. This feels so staged. Like, I want to hear... Yeah. Yep. In-depth conversation. I want to know what these people think. I if you listen to enough podcasts, you'll find out some of the most boring people in this world are actors. And, you know, I mean, really, some of my best podcasts I listen to, some of the most interesting and well-thought people are like comedians. And, you know, you hear some of these stories, and you get to hear the way they think and process. And I see them on TV just kind of doing the scripted stuff, and it's not enough. And I think that's something I really enjoy about this time period and this medium, is that you get to really get to say, oh, okay, even though I don't agree with this guy or this girl or this, whatever they're talking about, this topic, like, I, you know, at least I'm hearing a clear, unadulterated, unfiltered thought that is, they're giving some justification for.
Yeah. And no one's stopping them from saying what they want to say.
Absolutely.
You know, it's one of those things of why we started La Verdad, is just be able to say what is your truth, you know, because it might not be my truth, but it is yours. And I think you brought up a good point as far as millennials, you know, because I never looked at it that way. I never looked at it, I guess, since we're always brought down in media and everywhere, that I never looked at it as a positive thing. It was always kind of like, oh, this guy's whining now. What is this guy whining about now?
Right.
Or he didn't get his participation trophy, you know. And I feel like that has fueled a lot of the older generation within this whole Unite the Right rally. And then you have, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, and this might just my opinion, you might have these kids who are our age or my age and younger who are millennials, but they want to make daddy and mom proud, right? So they align their same mentality with their parents,
mm-hmm.
right? I personally think. So you might have this kid, Joe Blow, who his dad is a, you know, big Trump supporter, or perhaps even a racist. And deep down inside, he might be thinking, hey, this is not right, but I don't want to disappoint my dad, so let me go ahead and march in this rally. Do you think that goes through people's mind?
Well, I mean, I think specifically, for one, I think there is some truth behind that, to answer your question directly, one. But I also think, two, is if these people are coming from a place of privilege and they go to a college of privilege and they get a job out of privilege, and by that, I think sometimes we hear that word and we cringe, but if you had a family member or a loved one be able to hook you up with a job that is well-paying, that you didn't have to really do too much legwork other than the interview to get, that is a point of privilege. Mm-hmm. And I think this is why you see the success of minority Greek organizations in college, is because a lot of times people don't have that privilege of saying, oh, hey, you know what? I do know a doctor. Oh, hey, you know what? I do know someone in an organization. And that's what I really feel this has been the success of minority Greek organizations, is because that privilege sometimes isn't always naturally there. Now, I'll be the first one to sit here and say, I don't think everybody of privilege goes on to be successful and things like that. But I do think, and I have to do this often, you know, I am a light-skinned Latino. I can pass. I've been asked if I'm Greek. I've been asked if I'm French. People don't know. I can look very ambiguous until people hear my name. And that is a point of privilege. And I know that. I know that I can go in and I can talk to anybody. That is something that I know specifically. But for instance, I used to date a young woman that looked obviously very Hispanic. She was short, dark skinned, and here in the Plano, up here in the Dallas area, I was in a Plano area, which is like a north suburb of Dallas, pretty affluent. And we went to a movie theater, and I was on the movie was about to start in a little bit, so we went next door to a bar that was just to kind of kill some time. I was on the phone outside, and so she went in. I followed behind her, and then I find out that I go up to her, and she's almost in tears, and I go, "What the hell's going on?" And she goes, "This guy said some shit. Just don't worry about it. Let's finish our drink. Let's get out of here." So I was like, "Well, that's weird." And I kept bugging her. I was like, "What did he say? What did he say? Tell me, what did he say?" And she finally, because she knew I was going to get pissed off, she finally said, "Listen, he just said something like, hey, Maria, you want to get a margarita? You want some tequila?" Mm. Just making some like bullshit little comments like that to her as she walked by. Yeah. And of course, I heat up. And I'm like, "Well, I'm going to go talk to him." She's like, "No, let's just finish up. Let's go." So we're walking out, and she's walking in front of me. And this fucking guy did it again. He's sitting at the very front, and he goes, "Bye, Maria." And I just fucking, I lose it, dude. And I go up to his face. And of course, he's some skinny looking white dude with a, you know, fucking like $80 like a suit on with a stupid ass tie and a vape. And I just start cussing. Mm-hmm. I just start ripping into him. But again, that's something that I don't have to deal with every day because of what I physically look like. And you have to be able to openly say privilege isn't a bad thing. You have to be able to recognize when you have it and what you can get away with, because there are people out there that cannot get away with it. And there are people that are the clear targets of these racism, and there's nothing they can do to turn it off.
And that's the crazy part to think about, you know, because I do share that same sentiment with you where, you know, I could, you know, I'm light-skinned. I could get away with a lot of, as far as quote-unquote privilege, right? And I think about some of the people that do have, that deal with that on a daily basis. And then that person, it becomes like nothing to them, right?
Right.
And then if somebody does it to me, I react really quick. So do you think that by them numbing that, are they doing perhaps, or it's creating trauma to them, or it's creating this, I don't know, like to me, I feel like if you go through the same thing over and over, you're creating like a scab, right? And then it eventually becomes a callus. Right.
Or are you saying for like the victim or the perpetrator?
The victim. So you're always getting called out, right? You're always, you know, getting treated. So for example, your ex that kept walking into the bar. Let's just say she was the same person going in every single day, and they kept calling her Maria. Eventually, you just say, "Ha ha ha!" They laugh back at it.
Well, I'll put it this way: when I saw her, she was in tears. You know, and I think, you know, her experience was different. You know, she dealt with a lot of it. And I think, you know, I think what you're saying is a really great example of the need for that conversation, because some people are going to sit here and take that and say, all right, well, hold on a second. I'm going to go buy a beer so I can smash it on your head. You know, that may have been one person's reaction, but another person's reaction could be, really? I've accomplished all of this. I'm successful. I'm, you know, paying for my family's bills. I bought a house, and this is still what somebody looks at me as. You know, and this is why I feel like, and I want to openly go on record of saying, is that this is why the Black Lives Matter movement is not equal at all to what happened this past week in Charlottesville, Virginia. I've been seeing a lot of that on Facebook, and it just boggles my mind. I'll say it again 1,000 times, you know, because again, these people are coming from places of privilege. It's kind of like the whole, I feel like I'm going on another soapbox. I apologize. But this is like the whole like battle for Christmas, you know, like Christmas is family. You know, this is, ask a Jewish kid if they feel as though they're losing Christmas. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Christmas has been a huge thing for decades in this country. And now some people are finally saying, again, by pressure of millennials, which I'm very proud of, hey, that's kind of fucked up. People are like, now Christmas is being attacked, you know, that kind of thing. So again, it's when these people of privilege are finally getting challenged. And I think this is what we're seeing with the President Obama's his legacy is leaving, is that, you know, again, these people were always there. I think President Obama made them scared and made them kind of gather more. And I really feel as though President Trump's administration is now giving them a platform.
That's very, it's funny you say that, you know, and I keep thinking back, and while you're talking about that, you know, because they were around during President Obama's administration, but they didn't want to be loud about it.
Oh,
right?
For sure.
The one that kept, you know, it's like, oh shit, the guy in power is Black. It's the guy that we hate. But I feel like it gave them every little bit of ammunition so that when they have their guy in power, when they have another white man in power, or, you know, another person in power that's okay with it, now it's like, look at all the fucked up things that this guy did back in the day, blah,
right.
blah. And now they're coming out even stronger. But what I meant with the whole, like, callous thing is that I see it happening more and more within inner city or especially within Latinos, where you start becoming numb to it and you just laugh back at it or make it part of the joke. Or sometimes I've seen people that bring it up in the joke, because they don't want somebody else to, like, you know, they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm Pedro or I'm the drunken Mexican, blah, blah. But then I feel like it plays a big role in who they are, and eventually in this either depression that they might have or this self-hatred that they might have, and they transfer that onto their kids, and then that self-hatred starts, you know, being transferred down, and you get somebody like this guy, the anti Latino Puerto Rican that's all over Facebook. Do you think it plays a big role like that? Do you think that whole self-hatred comes from perhaps people making fun of you?
Yeah, I mean, like the assimilation, again, I mean, this is why some people have a little bit of a stink towards LULAC, because at LULAC's big thing was pushing that, you know, assimilation was a good thing. And I think there is I think the core of that as saying, hey, listen, we're coming to this country. How are we doing our best to adjust and become accustomed to this country and things like that? And I get that. But at the same time, how are we also respecting the struggle of where we came from and also the people who are behind us coming from maybe a very similar place that did not have all the same opportunities that I had? And so I do think there is some truth behind the idea of passing down shame, passing down, because there's two types of shame. There's carried shame and there's expressed shame. So expressed shame is basically like what they do in boot camp, like in the army, like, hey, you ain't nothing. You're not going to be nothing. You know, yeah. you're a dirt, you know, get down there with the rest of your dirt, because what they're trying to do is, you know, the army slogan, army of one, they're trying to break them down to build them up as an army of one. So that's expressed shame. But carried shame is something that stays with you. Hey, we don't talk about this. You know, we don't talk, hey, you know, your uncle's schizophrenia, listen, that stays in the house and you don't talk to anybody mm-hmm. about that. And we don't care what it says. You make sure you keep that in the house. And a lot of these rules in themselves can be detrimental, because it's basically saying you may have an opinion and you may want to talk about something, but it's not okay. So you need to sit there and be quiet, or you need to sit there and stuff it down. And I really think this is something that I tell my parents that I work with, is how are we doing our best to be careful about shedding our fears with our children and our family members? Simply because they are your fears does not mean it has to be their fears.
That's a big one, especially within the Latino families. I could just think about, for example, listening to some of the conversations that we've had with family, where it's like, oh, you don't talk about your gay cousin, right? Or they never mention, you know, that they just say, oh, he acts a little weird here and there, or they never want to talk about that, and eventually that person ends up leaving and never talking to the family,
right?
They feel that shame, so they get, you know, they get pushed away. It happens a lot within us, and I feel like, I remember having this conversation with someone, and I feel like our community, the Latino community, has been one that has got into it in a later fashion. I want to say, like, so back to the whole millennium thing, right? Millennial thing, where millennials are speaking up and saying this is wrong. But I feel like it's barely starting to hit the Latino families now, right? Where they're starting to stand up and say, no, man, why are you picking on our cousin who's gay? Let him do what he wants. That's who he is, right? So I feel like we're a little bit behind. It tends to happen a lot. And me personally, I think it has to do with a lot with, you know, not just culture, but the traditions and, you know, even religion that we believe in. Has caused us to be very, very quiet on a lot of these issues and kind of just take it. And we keep taking it.
Right. It's not even just taking it. It's basically not only just take it, but be happy that you're getting what you got. Mm-hmm. And that to me,
that's the worst, man.
Oh, it's the absolute worst. And
I fucking hate it.
Yeah. And one of the first ones, the first, you know, shows that I did with you, the union episode, I mean, that's some of the things that they struggle a lot with is, hey, listen, yes, you are right. You got a job and that's the best thing you got, but you have rights and you have, there are ways to have your voice heard.
And I hate that so much because yeah. I see it all the time. Right. And sometimes I'm sitting there, I'm like, yo, like, you have so much potential. Oh no, pero yo estoy bien, estoy ganando minimum wage, pero tengo mi casita, tengo esto, lo otro. I have my house, I have my family.
Right.
Yeah, but that's enough? Like, what? Right. I don't know, man. It baffles me. It's one of those things that I bring that up a lot within the family, you know, because I do the podcast. I do a lot of other projects, and people ask me all the time, like, why? Why do you do that? And to me, it's more about creating a legacy as opposed to, you know, being comfortable, which is having the bare minimum. And within our families, and I think within our culture, that has happened a lot, that we've been okay with having the minimum, and in return we end up, you know, cutting ourselves short, you know. We have potential and we never do it,
right?
And then you get old and you're like, man, I had this great idea, I just never went ahead with it, you know.
Right. And I think too, and this is where I'm gonna put my therapist hat back on, I feel like I've taken it off a lot of been getting real woke, and I apologize for that. But you know, my therapist hat is basically saying, and that's okay, you know, like, listen, at sometimes for someone who grew up with nothing, that can be, that is something to where some people are unwilling to move from. And if that's their choice and they're not hurting anybody, and they're willing to take care of their family, you know what? I'm okay with saying that is your choice, but at least hear what I have to say. You know, let's have a conversation about what are some other options that can happen. What, let's say that job is not there. Now, what are you going to do? Right.
Yeah.
Let's say that that family member is no longer there in that marriage. Okay. Your marriage is really great right now, but you know, what could possibly go wrong? How are we doing our best to address it and not just stay stagnant? And that's mm-hmm. when you can really start getting people to open up and have that conversation. And you'd be surprised, man. You'd be surprised how many people are willing to go out of that comfort zone. And yeah, they may have that, you know, make America great again hat. But if you, and a person who may not agree with that will see that person and say, oh, F this guy. I don't want to talk to him. I don't even want to waste my time. But if you take away that and you're able to talk to them, and I feel like we can get a middle ground, you'd be really surprised how many stuff we can agree upon, you know?
And that's a great way to kind of bring in the whole discussion that we've had today, because I feel like we don't do that enough. We don't try to talk. We automatically go ahead and label someone. You know, we're very well known to label people here in the U.S.
Right.
A lot of times it just takes that one single conversation. And the reason I bring that up is I was watching the news, and they had an ex white supremacist who was a real big, he was all over, like, you know, Maury and all over these shows back in the day.
Right.
And he changed his mentality by having a conversation with a black guy. And it was just that a little simple conversation that he had. And eventually that conversation kept happening and it kept happening. And he was like, wow, like, I don't really hate this guy. Like, it's just, he's just human like I am. So I guess it just comes down to, you know, let's be out there and open up conversation. And I always like to look at things as, you know, extending the white rose, right?
Right.
It's been something that we've been doing in La Verdad for a very long time. And sometimes you might sit here and be like, you know what, F that. I just want to fight whoever is a white supremacist. But perhaps it's about talking. And I think that's why, you know, not trying to sell my shirts or anything like that, but I think that's why a lot of people resonate a lot to the La Verdad, the Cultivo shirt, because it's a conversation starter, and it's a white rose, and you could kind of go into detail as far as, like, you know, I cultivate a white rose, I talk to, you know, by having a conversation with them. So I don't know if that's what you meant to bring out of that, but I think it's a great way to close this conversation by saying, have a conversation, talk about these issues with each other, talk with your family about it, talk to perhaps someone else who might be sharing some racist thoughts, and instead of just hitting each other back and forth with, like, oh, this and that and this and that, listen to them.
Yeah, for sure. 100% agree. Everything you just said, I completely agree with. It's, you'd be surprised how much stuff you can actually relate to someone who you've done your best to avoid. And I really honestly believe that if we can have these conversations, and really, people are pissed off. Let's just be honest. Let's be open. Everybody's allowed to be pissed off and angry. I don't want to see anybody die. I know they don't want to see anybody die, but we have to figure out how we can address this anger in a healthier way. And the best tool I know is communication. So I completely agree with you.
Exactly. Now, if you want to hear more about Renee's what he spoke about in his last podcast, the podcast is out, right? The one that kind of targets the same conversation.
Yeah. You know, there's going to be a lot of overlap. It's a short one. I just did a little, kind of just needed to, get some thoughts out. So it's a little 13 minute episode on anger, hate, and just kind of my thoughts on it. So it's I uploaded it. Today's the 18th. What's the day? I don't know what it is. Thursday. So I don't know when you're going to be posting this.
17th.
This is 17th.
This one will be going out tomorrow, the 18th, Friday. So just go on to where can they find your podcast?
You can find me on iTunes, Stitcher, as well as chubbytherapypod.com. A show dedicated to making mental health not scary. So check it out.
Awesome, man. And I wanted to thank you once again, bro, because you always come in and you're always able to hone in on these conversations that perhaps we don't want to have. Perhaps we're scared to have, or we don't know how to have them. So as Renee mentioned, as I mentioned, as the whole La Verdad team mentioned, have a conversation, talk to somebody, because it's the best way to understand what's really happening. Mi gente, if you could go ahead and share this episode with a loved one, whoever you want, on Facebook, go ahead and hit that share button. that's right below this link. Go to the Facebook page at La Verdad LTD, Instagram at La Verdad LTD. Basically, anywhere social media, we're available as at La Verdad LTD. Renee, man, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much once again. Hopefully, this recording sounds good with this new thing that I'm trying out. So the last thing I want is for it to get all erased.
We'll have to repeat it all, man.
Exactly, man.
Anything you ever need, man, I'm here for you.
Thank you so much. Mi gente, peace and God bless.